Mr. Balance, Real 10. We were discussing sort of almost like typical life during this advance, and you were talking about the food and what you had for breakfast, and then what would happen then?
Well, it would go on until you might be lucky and stop, and then make a proper meal, and if not, you have to make shift on the move, and that fell to the co-driver. With the little petrol cooker in his compartment, and they're doing the best he could.
And that would be heating up the compo rations?
Yes. But of course, he did stick some tins in the exhaust, and they would be heated up.
And so basically, you'd just be driving a lot of the time, or you know.
Driving, stopping, and waiting. Have to bear in mind that it wasn't every day that you were the leading squadron or leading troop, and you could just be following on those leading, and you would stop and wait, because for some reason they were held up, and a lot of your time was spent just sitting and waiting, but you didn't have an opportunity then to get on and cook meals, and because you were expecting any minute to be told to go round the flank or go through the leading troops and carry on. So, a soldier's lot is a lot of the time is waiting and expecting and hoping, dreading,
Did they get uncomfortable cooped up in a tank for all the stuff?
It had grown upon one, and of course, all the time you were listening on the air, you could hear what was going on, and so you had a good idea what was likely to happen in the near future.
That's the regimental wireless net.
Regimental, yes. So you did know what was going on all around you. It was a great help.
Did you ever hear, because there's quite a capacity for embarrassment and amusement on the regimental net if people forgot to what they were doing. Did you ever hear much of any amusement on the net?
Well, we do hear funny things at times. I remember hearing a voice come up and say, obviously to his tank crew, thinking he was on the high sea, and he said, "Hey, look at Wee Brucey, he's gone so and so picking flowers." And Wee Brucey was the squadron leader. Things like that, when the members had happened. And of course, always the error of saying, "Make a mug of tea, Jock," or something, and hearing that come under the regimental net. But it was quite remarkable, the regimental net. Something like 80 radio sets all on, and it worked almost 100%. Very, very good. And they were the old fashioned radio sets, really. Certainly quite a taste to have this thing. One had to carry a penny in one's pocket if you were a radio operator to adjust the penny screws to tune the thing in. The penny fitted into the slot. Okay.
Anything else about daily life on the move or as you say, waiting?
Yes. Well, of course, it was also the very necessary cause of nature, which sometimes the moment had to be fixed for that.
And what would most people do? I think we've discussed this slightly before. Yes.
Well, most people would get the deed done before setting off. And, some of us didn't. strangely enough, the crew was inside the tank. It was kind of very reluctant to get out. They felt protected and at home in there. Whereas in an infantry room, we couldn't go inside one for all the tea in China.
Did you see much of the infantry during this sort of advance?
Oh, yes. We very often carried them. If we were not the leading squadron, we would certainly be carrying infantry. We would have, I think it was a platoon or perhaps a company or a squadron. And they would be all over the tank. We'd probably have a dozen or more clinging on to the top of the tank, which they were quite happy to do. It saved them walking. And they're very nice chaps. We had the same crew very often, time and time again, so we got to know them a bit.
And did they talk to you much about how they felt about tanks? So, you know.
Well, I don't think they talked much about tanks, more about females.
Would you liaise with infantry officers at all, or would that be done by Steele Brownlee?
That would be done by Steele Brownlee, yes.
Now, you were charging up through towards Belgium with a fair liquor, right? What's the next thing you remember?
Well, the next thing I really was going to Antwerp, the liberation of Antwerp, which was quite an experience.
What do you remember of that?
Well, we had quite a long French march, and on the outskirts of Antwerp, we were met by huge crowds of people cheering us on, pressing drinks on us and so on. And then after a bit, I recall we were in one street being mobbed, and then we were told to advance, which we did with difficulty, especially with the people, civilians, all over the tanks and everywhere. And we went round the corner, and there was not a soul in sight, hardly a soul in sight, and we were fired upon immediately. Contrast was enormous, and we were being sniped from a large factory building. I remember putting an AT shell through every window in the side of the factory that was looking at us.
What sort of sniping? I mean, just machine gun or
yes, rifle. Really. Very difficult to spot. And then they did do quite a bit of fighting there.
What do you remember of it?
Well, the usual thing. Firing, hiding, keeping the fingers crossed.
Had you had any changes in crew yet, or was it still?
Well, I must have done that. I honestly can't remember all these things.
That's all right.
I suppose if I sat back and thought for hours, I would, but I just think mostly the whole thing is a bit of a mixed-up blur at this stage.
That's fine. It's going fine. So what next, then? You had this bit of fighting in Antwerp itself.
Well, then after we pulled back out of Antwerp and continued on. I think we're getting near to the stage now where we pulled back into Ypres to re-equip the new tanks.
That's the next thing you really remember, then?
Yes.
There are bits and bobs in the between, but not that you remember.
Yeah.
You gave up, you went to Tweeps first in round about December and handed in your tanks.
No, we handed our tanks in, I think it was probably in November. We handed them in just outside Brussels at a vehicle park which was set up there by the Ordnance Corps. We left them there, and then we went in lorries back to Tweeps. Where I think Steel Brownlee had already gone a week or two before, and he had a few Comets, which are the new tank, the British tank, and we trained on them for 2 or 3 weeks. And
this is before the bulge battles in Ardennes.
Yeah.
And what were your first... I didn't realise so any of you had Comets before that. What were your first impressions of the Comet? Did you get a go on them?
Delighted with the armour. The defensive armour was thick, the front. The tank was... the silhouette was low. It was fast. And above all, it had a good gun on it. 76 millimetres. I think we had 6 for the regiment to train them. But then, of course, the Battle of the Bulge started.
I'll come back to the Comet then, because you didn't go into action in the Comets, did you?
Oh, yes.
You did?
Yes. Not this stage.
No, sorry, I mean in the Ardennes you didn't.
No, not in the Ardennes.
No. So what happened when the Ardennes thing happened?
Well, the Battle of the Bulge started. The civilians, from whom we were on very friendly terms, were of course extremely worried. And they were saying, don't worry, if it gets serious, they'll call us back. And of course, a day or two after that, we were called back. And we got into the lorries again and drove to Brussels, driven to Brussels, where this great vehicle park was that we'd handed in our old Shermans. And we had just had to draw tanks out. We didn't get the same ones back. And we were told, that's good, to go to one of the bridges near the Mirror. And we just drew the tank in the afternoon and loaded off to get there before it was dark. We got there about when it was dark. We passed on the way quite a number of American vehicles pulling out. And we stayed on this bridge overnight. And the following morning...
Anything happened?
Nothing happened at all. Not a thing. The following morning we thought we'd check on things. And I checked on the gun I did, the big gun, and there was no firing pin in it. So, just as well, nothing had happened. And
could you get a replacement for something like that?
There was a spare in the tank. There was always a spare firing pin.
So it would have just been... A kerfuffle, but a kerfuffle you couldn't have dealt with in action.
That's right, yes. I mean, the firing pin could break under some circumstances, and you would always carry a spare. But you would assume when you've got a tank, there was one in. And then, of course, you started the Ardennes campaign.
And what do you remember of that?
Well, I remember we were extremely worried. We thought that there were going to be some big battles ahead. But in fact, we held the line for a bit and didn't really see any. The Germans never got to the point where we were until we started to advance. And we were going up into some hills, huge hills, forested hills, covered in snow, on one which we call Chapel Hill, because the was a little chapel somewhere up inside. And I remember there was a German SP beside the chapel, and the tank next to me fired at it, missed, and it left a neat round hole in the chapel wall, which I have a photograph of somewhere. But it was extremely cold.
Who got the self-propelled gun then, or did his next shot get it? Or did your one get it?
No, I forget that. If I remember rightly, Corporal Finlay, who's we did, strangely enough, on the opposite slope to us, we fired on some Shermans, which the Germans were firing at us for. And they had apparently captured them from the Americans and were using them. It seemed very strange.
Did they have German markings, or were they?
They did have some black crosses painted roughly on, yes. But we sat on a hill there for a few days.
Did you hit any of these?
Yes, of course. We've gone up, I've been gone up.
Could you see the shot in flight? Because it seems to be.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So you could be certain it was yours?
Oh, yes. Yes, we were watching all the way in the place.
Do you remember the circumstances of hitting the Sherman? Where you were, where it was?
I was on one hill. And they were on another hill about a mile away.
And they were firing at you?
Yes, there was all sorts of firing going on because I think it was 6 airborne. Regiment who were trying to clear a village which was down the roads. I also remember that we were up there for quite a few days, and that's taken an enormous amount of. We ran out of fresh water, and it does take an enormous amount of snow to melt down to make enough water for the hell of room. And we were getting so tired of this, I could see. A tank a little way away, which had been knocked out with a water can on the back. And I thought, well, I'll go across and get there. But as soon as I was halfway across, I had to go back because of the shadow. The Germans spotted me straight away. And, very sad, too, this incident. I remember. A chap in a tank that was knocked out, coming up on the arse and saying he'd lost his leg. The rest of the crew had gone, he'd been captured, and he was keeping quiet inside the tank. And it was very, very tragic. I think he did actually die there, but they couldn't go and get him.
And you actually heard that coming through your net?
Well, I heard him asking what he should do. Help, yes.
Anything else about time on Chapel Hill?
No, except as I say, it's very cold, a lot of snow. Till eventually, the tide turned there, and the 6th Airborne Regiment, some of their tanks were down with them. They cleared the village of Bure, B-U-R-E, and the German retreat started. And I didn't think we followed on much because we had to go back to carry on with our equipment.
So you returned to Ypres?
Well, the regiment did, but I was left in charge of the troop.
Were you a sergeant by now?
No, I wasn't. I was a corporal.
Corporal.
And I think I was doing troop leader at the time for some reason. Anyway, I was left.
Four troop?
Yes. The regiment went back to Ypres, and I was left behind with a composite group, company, I can't remember what it was, troop tanks, certainly, just to hold the fort in case the Germans tried to advance again. But they didn't, and after a few days, And we were then told to go back to, they had our Germans back into Brussels and that, and go back to Ypres. And I don't remember too that the roads were atrocious and frozen, glassy, ice, and tanks were going all over the place. And very difficult to control them.
Was there any sort of way of controlling a tank on these conditions? I mean, was there anything they could put on the tracks or anything, or was it just a matter of driving carefully?
Just driving carefully, nothing much one could do. And if the thing started to slide, it just had to let it slide until it hit something and stopped itself. But good.
Was it cold in the tanks?
Yes. It was certainly cold as a commander in the half of you that was out. But no, they weren't terribly warm in the day.
So the next thing, you went back to Ypres.
That's right. Continued our training on the Comet.
Now, what about training in the Comet? I believe they went on gunnery exercises up at a Gravelines, actually firing into the German positions in Dunkirk. Do you remember that?
Yes, we fired a few rounds and we were very impressed. Somebody accidentally fired one round in the big shed we had our tanks in while doing maintenance.
Do you remember that? Who did it?
I didn't know who did it. I knew at the time, but I can't recall now. Fortunately, it was an AP shot, so it just made a hole and went whizzing away. But the noise made us jump.
How did you get on with the population? Because you were in billets, weren't you? Perhaps to start from that. Yeah. Where were your billets and what were they like?
I was in a billet with another sergeant. I was a sergeant. I think I was promoted sergeant at Ypres, or just before. And two of us were in the house near the Cold Hall, which is the town hall, the kind of called the Cold Hall. And we were right in the centre of the group. So this man he was a fruit and vegetable wholesale man who went to Brussels for the market. Loaded his lorry with vegetables and fruit and distributed to shops around. And the whole population there were extremely friendly, very lavish in entertaining us, considering that they had very little themselves to eat and so on. And they were extremely friendly, and I still corresponded with one there. We certainly didn't celebrate Christmas then. Yeah. We celebrated Christmas in the out there.
I think they had a delayed Christmas in 21st of January or something.
That's right.
Do you remember that at all?
Yes. I was in the Sergeant's Mess for that. We had a dance, invited lots of the civilians in. It was very good. It was a very interesting time at Ypres because we had tours of the Great War, battlefields and cemeteries, and went to such places as the Menin Gate, and was the ceremony there at 9 o'clock every night. And really, apart from the language, it was almost like being in this country.
What were the battlefields, in what state were they? I mean, were there still identifiable lines, or had it been ploughed over?
No, by and large. That was all agricultural country, but there was in one place called 60 had been preserved as it had been 40, and although it was a bit dilapidated, you could still see the British trenches and the German trenches about 30 yards apart, with odd relics flying around still, rifles and things, rather overgrown and so on. But very, very interesting.
Now, what about the sergeant's mess? What did that offer you as a new sergeant?
Very little, really. Because only, it was only really a bar. Because we ate in a... We ate in our house where we were billeted. So we didn't go to meals in the sergeant's mess. We just went to... It was in a school. And we had a bar with everything you could wish for to drink.
What did you drink then?
Oh, everything. As I do now.
Did you drink a lot then? Or by any standards? I mean, it's all different, isn't it? Well, how much you drink?
Well, I suppose, yes. I mean, we didn't drink all day or anything like that. But we had proper bar hours. The mess opened in the evening. But of course, if you wanted to drink that day, you could in the Belgian Catholics and so on. But, no, I don't really recall a lot of absolute drunkenness. I mean, I do recall people drinking, but still being able to carry on and do their job.
So a bit tipsy or a bit drunk, but not drunk.
No.
You didn't have a drink of choice, I mean, you know, that you'd normally drink.
No, drink anything.
Did it offer anything, sort of like a pub environment with sort of darts or anything like that? Or?
Yes, I think so.
Was there any entertainment sort of organised for the troops? For the rest of, you know, the men.
Yes, they all had their canteens and so on, yes. The corporals had their corporals' mess. But a lot of them went to the cafes, and they were made extremely well. Drank either beer or cognac. And both of them were very cheap.
Anything else about your time at Ypres?
No, except that we thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a very good time.
So the next thing then was that when you moved out, that was with the Comets.
Yes. And
do you remember who was in your crew in the Comets? Had Boyne joined you then? Because that's somebody we've interviewed. Terry Boyne.
Yes, I think he was in my crew then.
Do you remember who your crew was? I know. Or was it mostly the same?
I can't remember now.
And what was Boyne in your crew?
Gunner.
And what do you recall of him then? I know you know him now, but yes. What do you remember him as a gunner when you met him all them years ago?
Well, he was a good gunner, a nice chap, and a hard worker. And a good chap to have around.
Were some gunners better than others? I mean, quicker at getting the gun round?
Yes. I suppose in any walk of life, if you've got, let's say, two drivers together, one is a more natural driver and drives better, and the other one is quite competent.
You don't remember the rest of your crew in the Comet at that time?
No, I ought to. I don't.
That's okay.